Hello, Internet. My name's Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And this week on the Screen Verdict podcast, I'm excited.
I'm pretty excited too.
And you might be surprised, because Matt just described me as the most apathetic person he knows.
Whoa, I didn't quite go that far before the podcast. And we don't have time to explain the context to all the listeners, so...
But for once, I'm going to show some emotion and get excited because we're reviewing a Wes Anderson film, specifically The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, and I'm not as big a Wes Anderson fan as you are. You're a massive Wes Anderson fan. But his last, like, two films, I was very high on. I love Fantastic Mr. Fox. And I love Moonrise Kingdom even more. So I was pretty excited.
Yeah, I really enjoyed both of those. And I think you like Moonrise Kingdom perhaps even more than me. And it won the... fabled, infamous, treacherous award in 2012.
It's like one of those three things. It's like, it's not fabled, because it's an actual award. It's an actual thing that exists. It's not treacherous. No one's ever got into any treachery of one of these awards. It is famous. It is...
obviously, we're talking about the Screen Verdict Award for the best film of 2012. It was Moonrise Kingdom, so it has a lot to live up to, The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, and I was just excited when you told me this was the next Wes Anderson film. At first, I thought it was just a sequel to The Best Marigold Hotel.
A film that we did not actually review, so... It doesn't have an official verdict from us, but as we talked about, I think in our Oscar podcast, the trailer did very well when we went to Roseville Cinema to see The Artist, and a certain senior demographic seemed to find that trailer very funny. So maybe we'll head back to Roseville Cinema to see their thoughts on The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, but and look, I was tricked at first because it opens with Tom Wilkinson, who was in the Best Marigold Hotel. So I was like, oh, maybe it is a sequel.
Maybe this will be like one of those Pixar theory things where you think it's a separate thing, but actually a series of clues and timelines actually link it to the Best Exotic Marigold world, if you will.
Yeah, well, maybe Tom Wilkinson just picks roles based on whether they're about hotels, good hotels in India.
He's actually homeless. He just does films for free hotel accommodation.
Yeah. I would love to talk with Tom Wilkinson and say, what's better, the Best Marigold Hotel or the Grand Budapest Hotel? What's the best hotel to stay at?
Now, as excited as I am to talk about the film, I'm not... so excited to say the film's name. I feel like I'm going to butcher it up, saying it over and over at some point. Can we agree to refer to it as GBH?
GBH.
H. How very proper of you. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P.
Well, I'm happy if we call it H. GBH. I don't want you to butcher the pronunciation of the letter H.
All right, so we'll be discussing how H compares to Moonrise Kingdom and other Wes Anderson films. Okay, so where does the film start? Well, it starts with Tom Wilkinson, as you said. He is, I guess, in the present day, and he has written a book. So he goes back in time, not
through... Is the book called The Grand Budapest Hotel...
I think so.
Can we stop calling, like, books in movies after the movies? I'm a bit over that.
Who else has done it?
I don't know. It happens all the time.
It was one of those things where I thought, yeah, that probably has been done, but I can't think of an example. I'll ask Matt for one. He's like, well, I can't think of an example, but they do it all the time.
No, I can't. I was watching a... Atonement, right? And there's an Atonement spoiler here, by the way. Although I think I've already said what I think. Guess what that spoiler is going to be. And the person's like starts off writing a book or something in Atonement. I go, guarantee you, this book's going to be called Atonement. and it's going to be the final reveal of the film. And I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Well, fortunately, that's not the big reveal of the film. We're told that he writes the book at the start. And so, rather than just putting some prosthetic or CGI on Tom Wilkinson's face, he goes back in time and transforms into Jude Law. And he is at this sort of run-down hotel, the Grand Budapest Hotel. And he learns the story of the hotel through F. Murray Abraham. So we go back in time another 30 years, or thereabouts, to get to the real heart of the film. The heart of the film, the story of the film, is F. Murray Abraham when he's about a teenager working in this place as a bellboy. What do they call him?
Lobby boy.
Lobby boy.
The lobby boy.
Mm. And his story with Ralph Fiennes and the story of the hotel.
Yeah, he's got the lobby boy thing like on his head for like 90% of the film.
I thought it was too long for me.
Yeah.
The film's title's too long. Lobby boy's too long. I had to shortcut it. Nickname him Bellboy.
Yeah, well, I think like I don't know. Sometimes I make mistakes with characters' names and can't remember them and stuff. But, like, usually if a character and something had their name tattooed across their head for the movie, I probably wouldn't forget it. Sorry, I'm feeling particularly snarky today.
It's because of that one time that you mistyped the title of a podcast and you're like, look who's making mistakes now.
That was the last time I was ever allowed to type the name of a podcast.
Okay, so he's the lobby boy, and his name is Zero. Is this a story from Zero to Hero? Maybe, we don't want to spoil the film.
It's the song from the movie Hercules, Zero to Hero.
Now, I like time travel films. I met various timelines, you know, I love Cloud Atlas, I love Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Well, I guess
we've got to go back to the future!
Yeah, well, okay. Actually, there's time travel and different timelines, I guess, are different types of movies. But anyway, Memento's a good one. That plays with timelines. I love Memento. This, I really didn't understand the point of two, let alone three timelines. Don't you think we could have just set the film in the 40s or whatever with Ralph Fiennes and Zero? And it would have made just as much sense?
Yes. We could have. But is it interesting? Obviously the Tom Wilkinson storyline is a big WTF. Why do we need him? Why is it important that he wrote a book? Like that, really, we get no insights into the hotel at all. So I'm a bit confused by that. Although I did really like his opening scene. With the kid, like, trying to distract him while he's talking to the camera. And as someone at church who does a lot of children's ministry, and I saw this with someone who does children's ministry with me at church, we definitely, like, looked at each other in that moment and was like, oh, we know what this is like. To have, like, us trying to do something, trying to explain something, having some kid throwing stuff at us and distracting us. And I just loved the bit at the end where the kid just comes up and says, sorry, and they're like, okay. We don't have time. So we could definitely relate to that scene tonight. That was one of my favourite bits. But from a story perspective, was completely useless, had no clue what that was doing there. The Jude Law one, is it somewhat interesting to see this sort of run-down, dishevelled hotel that looks like time has passed it by, and then hearing, back in the day, this was the place to be. Stuff was happening. Is that interesting?
I guess the contrast does give a little bit more interest as to, ooh, well, how did things go in the hotel? How did it get from this point to how it is now? And, but not overly. Basically, I didn't understand it, but I felt like it was saved by the quality of the scenes themselves. Even though I don't think it added that much to the story, they were entertaining. And when something's entertaining, you know, you can usually make the exception for it. You can forgive the film for doing it.
Do you know what I learned from those scenes? Was maybe this F. Murray Abraham Zero character wasn't the best guy to be running a hotel.
The thing that I got from it was, and by that I mean didn't get from it, was what ethnicity is F. Murray Abraham? Isn't he white? Well, the reason why I bring that up is because to me, he seems like he's white, but Zero looks as though he could... Well, the actor that plays him is Guatemalan.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like a young F. Murray Abraham.
His father immigrated from Syria during the 1920s famine.
Hmm.
So he's sort of half Syrian, I guess. I don't know if I would have described him as white, but I don't really think about people racially when I'm looking at them. I really...
It doesn't matter to me what race he is, and it doesn't matter to me what race Zero is, but the fact that I thought the two actors were of different races was confusing. Did you not find that confusing? Did you think that it was the same person in the story?
I just, like, not as racially aware as you, I guess. I'm like, sort of a bit above that.
Sounds like you're colorblind, to be honest. I don't think this has any sort of social consciousness or moral values to it.
No. Seriously.
Get an eye test. I agree.
Yeah. No, seriously, I guess... I didn't really think about that, to be honest.
I found it baffling.
But it did... Like, I wasn't really thinking much. It did sort of halfway through. I like thought... Oh, yeah, this is, like, Zero, I guess. It's sort of... It wasn't really that... Because the stories were in some way so disjointed, I wasn't making the connections as much. It was almost like F. Murray Abraham just telling a story that happened in the hotel.
But however that works, I agree. You do wonder, how did the hotel go from such an awesome-looking place to being what it is in the Jude Law era? It's like... You know, if you were given an amazing product like the Screen Verdict podcast, yes. And 30 years from now, the Screen Verdict podcast was only getting, you know, 4 or 5 visitors, 4 or 5 listeners a week, you'd really have to question the management. You'd really wonder what the owners were doing.
Yeah, how did those people drop the viewership 50% in those 30 years? What happened there, guys?
They probably offended Guatemalans and Syrians.
Yeah.
So is that what the story is? Just him making excuses? Is him explaining himself? Just a list of reasons, like, here's the story as to why it's not my fault.
I don't know. He doesn't really provide an explanation, though. And it's sort of also weird, because Jude Law seems interested in him because he's a successful businessman. Is it like, he's like... Oh, he's this mysterious entrepreneur that runs the place.
Well, he is a writer, not a businessman. Perhaps he was looking for more of a story than business tips. Yeah.
Well, he got one. He got a story.
So the hotel is in its prime. Zero is the lobby boy, and he meets Ralph Fiennes, who is the concierge at the hotel. And he's the man. Like, he's ordering everyone around, he's bringing in all the high rollers, sort of getting up to some mingling with some of the elderly female high rollers.
Oh, yeah.
And he becomes a bit of a mentor to Zero, to teach him that sort of class and sophistication and just the way to run a hotel business.
Yeah, because nothing says... class and sophistication more than sleeping with senior citizens at your hotel.
That might not be the best idea, as proves to be the case in the film, because he ends up getting embroiled in this whole sort of scandal and whatnot because one of these people dies, and he's sort of implicated in that. And there's a story about the will, and he's being accused of murder, and sort of unfolds from here. It ends up being sort of a buddy film between Zero and Ralph Fiennes' character, who is Mr. Gustav.
Mr. G. It's called Mr. G.
We're only going to talk in letters and numbers from now on. GBH, Mr. G, Zero, SV, 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
That was an example score. Don't worry, haven't spoiled the real screen verdict. So do we like this duo? This is sort of the lead duo, the team.
I think they're a fun team. I did like them as a team. They got into some mischief together. I love Ralph Fiennes running. I thought that was really good in the film.
I agree. I really like them. I found them very entertaining, and they played off each other very well because Ralph Fiennes is it's eccentric and flamboyant and theatrical and dramatic, whereas Zero is very dry. And he can be quite witty, but he's very sort of, passive. He's reactionary. And the combination of the flamboyant and the droll, I thought worked really well.
Do you know what I also noticed about Wes Anderson? And correct me if you think I'm wrong here, but I think this is like the third film in a row where I've only seen him having these relationships, which are very about apologizing and forgiving. Like, there's this scene where Ralph Fiennes is, like, really mad at Zero for forgetting some things. And then, like, about, like, you know, the next scene or something, he's going, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said those things. That was unfair of me. And Zero goes, oh, that's okay. Like, and we had the same thing in Moonrise Kingdom when, like, you know, the kid would say something insensitive to the girl and then she'd storm off, and then he'd go and apologize, and then she'd be, that's okay. Like, very, like, and the same thing happened with Mr. Fox and his wife on Fantastic Mr. Fox. It just seems like there's a lot of people just, it seems like often, like, the Wes Anderson conflicts are quite short-lived, and they get deflated very quickly rather than leading to big drama.
Is that a theme of the film? People should be more willing to apologise. People never want to admit they're wrong or take any blame. Wes Anderson, she's like, hey man, just talk about it. Say, look, I stuffed up. Do you forgive me? And then they'll be like, yeah, it's all good, man.
I don't know if that's a big theme of the film, but it's a little thing I'm noticing in all his films. Just a little, maybe a little sort of thing that he thinks, that he's just slipping into his movies.
Yeah, maybe you should have been a little bit less harsh when I made the mistake about the lobby boy. I sort of said, look, sorry, my bad. I said bellboy. I apologize. And you could be, it's okay. Let's move on.
Yeah, no, I am sorry about that. I was a bit harsh on you with that. Like, because, you know, bellboy, like, I can see how you'd make that mistake. So I am sorry, Jonathan.
Look, it's working already. So I guess they're kind of the good guys of the film. We got some, I guess, sort of baddies. Adrian.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
Adrian Brody, he is a relative of the person that dies, and he wants the inheritance, basically. And he's a pretty nasty character. We don't really like him. Which is kind of funny, I think, because I feel like Adrian Brody doesn't really have the face of a bad guy for movies. So to see him play this kind of cartoonishly unlikable character was actually quite entertaining.
Yes.
Matt strongly agrees.
I don't know. I think he sort of does look a bit like a baddie, like this skinny little creepy guy. Like, I don't know.
You got that Steve Buscemi thing going on, maybe.
Yeah, the googly eyes. You got the googly eyes. Does he have googly eyes? I can't remember what Adrian Brody looks like now.
And then we've got Willem Dafoe playing almost like a German hitman.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't find him as funny. I thought it was just a little bit silly.
I'd agree. Well, then he threw the cat out the window is pretty funny. But I put more that a testament to the comedic value of a cat going, "Row!" sound effect. than William Dafoe.
Yeah, and Jeff Goldblum's reaction was very funny.
Yes.
So we get a couple of other cameos.
Bill Murray's in it. Bill Murray. Single Murray. Who cares about the rest?
Yeah, we love Bill Murray. I feel like they could have used him more. This was an actual cameo. It wasn't really like a small part. It really was a cameo.
And it was good. His bit was good.
Actually, that was something I noticed. A lot of people that were in Moonrise Kingdom were in this film as well. Like, even some of the scout kids, they just gave them little roles to do. Yeah, that's a pretty good break. Getting a Wes Anderson film, you make friends with Wes Anderson, it's pretty much going to set you up.
Yeah, Wes Anderson's a loyal guy. If you're in his good books, I think, you're going to get another movie with him.
I think apparently the person that co-wrote the story for Grand Budapest Hotel, or GBH, as we're supposed to be calling it, did the paintings or something in Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah.
I feel like he's probably just a friend of Wes Anderson's. But imagine if he was just some guy that did the paintings. It's like, you know what? I was just thinking about the paintings we used for the set, 13 years ago on the Royal Tenenbaums. Maybe I should get that guy to write my next movie with me.
Yeah, if he can paint good paintings, he must be a good writer. Speaking of paintings, that was a big thing about the film. The thing that... Ralph Fiennes, Mr. Gustav, Mr. G got given in the will was a painting of a girl with an apple. What did you think of this painting?
Was it a boy?
Whatever.
I think it's called Boy with Apple. To be fair, it was a rather feminine-looking boy.
Look, we're not all perfect, Jonathan. We don't all...
No, I can't forgive you, man. You got to actually apologise rather than making excuses.
Okay. So anyway, girl with boy, or whatever, boy with whatever it is. You're dodging the question. What did you think of the painting?
Well, this painting's supposed to be worth millions. It's going to be an amazing painting. And when they set a painting up to be that good, it's either got to be a really impressive painting or just a bit shit for comedic value. And it seemed just like a fairly average painting. I thought maybe it leaned towards the bit shit side when it was just a boy with apple.
I really thought it was the latter. When is this set? Is this set in World War II? Like, which World War is this set in?
I think it's World War II. They have these people that I think are supposed to resemble Nazis, though I'm not sure if they ever actually use that term.
Yeah, I don't think there were swastikas, were there? That's like your Nazi red flag.
I think they were the ZZ instead of the SS.
Yeah. See, because the Nazis love that swastika. Like, they wore it on, their arms and their hats and, everything. They really love that logo. Something I was surprised is if this artwork was so valuable, right, if it was such an amazing artwork, right, why weren't the Nazis more interested in this? Why isn't Bob Balaban trying to get it? Where's George Clooney popping in at any point? No, there did not seem to be a huge amount of interest from the soldiers in the artwork.
Yeah, because we know that Nazis love stolen artworks. Because as told to me by George Clooney, and Clooney is where I get all of my political and historical information from. So you did question, what's the point of trying to take over all these countries and all these hotels if you don't have a boy with apple to decorate them with?
Yeah, yes. So this stuff happens. There's a skiing scene. There's other stuff.
Okay, so we don't want to tell you any more about the film. We don't want to spoil anything. Is there anything more general we want to touch on, or is it time to move on to a verdict?
There is a love story in this with S. Ronan. obviously, Wes Anderson is the second film in a row where he's touched on young love. Did we like this romance?
I liked them as a couple. I thought there were some cute moments, but it wasn't really much of a love story. I didn't think there was much of an interesting arc to it. It was more just good moments. I think their love story wasn't really the focus of the film. It was more about the adventure with Zero and Gustav.
Set, tone, those sorts of things. It was very Wes Anderson. I felt like the landscape scenes of the hotel and the little cable cars and stuff was almost fantastic Mr. Foxy.
Yeah, I feel like Wes Anderson would have made the best dioramas at school. At the science fair, he would have been walking home with the blue ribbon each year. Though, I don't know, he might not have had a $20 million budget when he was in elementary school.
Yeah. And the best, do the science teachers for the diorama go for the best looking one, which he clearly would have had, or would they have been doing stuff like, the tree isn't, like, purple, Wes. Like,
not everything's made of pastel, all right?
Yeah, yeah.
This is a science, yeah. This is a science fair, all right?
Yeah. This isn't the wonderful world of your, like, bizarro imagination. Like,
why is everything so nostalgic? Did your parents help you with this? Is that why it looks like it's from the 60s? Fail. Yeah. Fail, Wes.
Go home. Oh, man. We need an education system that encourages people to be imaginative and to use their imaginations and creativity and innovation. Sorry, I'll get off.
Was that another theme of this film? People need to apologize for and be less scientific with their approach to dioramas.
Yeah.
Let your freedom run wild, kiddies.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Okay. So let's give it a verdict, yeah.
Sure. I really enjoyed the film. I thought it was super entertaining. I think you've got a great lead pair. And I think you've got an interesting story. There's kind of a few twists and turns. It moves very quickly. You even get a couple of action scenes. But I think that was sort of it. I think it lacked the depth of some of Wes Anderson's other films. It was really enjoyable to watch, but, you know, there are just moments in The Royal Tenenbaums which just really hit you. It's just, it strikes that emotional chord with you that separates the film from being great to something special. It's what makes you say something is one of your favorite films. It's that all, that X factor, that indescribable quality, which I think Wes Anderson has been able to put into his films and was why I say he's one of my favorite directors. This film had other Wes Anderson qualities. It looked great. It was really funny, but it just didn't hit as hard emotionally. So I still recommend it, but not one of my favorites. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
I really enjoyed watching this film. It was so, it's so fun. The characters are so great. All the cameos are good value. And it's a good story. You're intrigued. You're excited. It's like a really good movie and really fun. And it's a 90-minute story told in 90 minutes. They've done it. No overkill from Wes, as usual. So I really, really liked it. But again, it didn't quite hit the emotional core or have the very clearly structured narrative, I think, of A Moonrise Kingdom.
Mm.
Like, I was a bit more on board with the two kids on Moonrise Kingdom going on their adventure than I was with this. That I think this one was a little more all over the place, maybe, with the three different storylines and different characters everywhere and things. It didn't seem quite as well glued together, maybe as a Fantastic Mr. Fox or a Moonrise, but it was still great. And it still has so much fun watching this. So I'm going to give this one an 8 out of 10. 8.5 out of 10.
Wow, there you go. Who would have thought twice in a row Matt has enjoyed the Wes Anderson film more than me. Or at least given it half a point more.
Yeah. There we go.
But there you go. We both enjoyed it.
Yeah, we both did. Trying to open the door to housekeeping, I think.
No creaky sound effect this week. We got that WD-40 we've been talking about, and it's it's a smooth opening into housekeeping.
Oh, okay. I was waiting for you to open the door. but you already did. I didn't hear it because it was so so smooth.
Yeah, that might be a security issue. Maybe
okay. There's some news in the entertainment world. Someone's been like reporting on this, and I think this is quite big. I'm not sure you've heard this yet, Jonathan. You're in America, so probably you have. It's probably the talk of the town. George Clooney engaged.
This is heartbreaking to people everywhere. None more so than Matt. How are you doing, buddy? Just, you know, just let it all out. Let the listeners are here for you, buddy.
Number one. My love.
This isn't getting edited at all. I'm leaving all of this in.
I'm swelling so much I can't talk. The muscles in my cheeks are swelled up. Okay. Well, firstly, my love for George Clooney was not about a romantic desire to marry him. So it's not really affecting me.
That was wise of you to restrict your expectations.
Yeah. So I'm happy for him that he's found someone, and I wish all the best for him. But at the same time, he said he'd never... You know, he's sort of been a bit of a commitment phobe, George Clooney. So I hope he's up for the task of marriage. this is hard when you think about it, isn't it? Because, not for me necessarily, but do girls who like George Clooney, are they like, did they have their expectations set low with, look, he says he's never going to commit to anyone, so... You know, there's not really much hope for me with him. Like, I want to marry someone. I want to settle down with someone. I'm not going to get that with George. I need to set my eyes on a different goalpost. Or do all the other girls he was going out with, or all the other girls who are interested in him and go, oh, man, it's not that he didn't want to commit himself to anyone. It's that he didn't want to commit himself to me. Because I've had girls say to me, I'm not looking for a relationship now. That's not really what I'm in for. I want some time being single, some time whatever. And then they get a boyfriend. And you go, yeah, I think the problem was with me. So...
Well, we've talked about some great parenting advice from Will Smith, and he also gives some great dating advice in the classic film Hitch, in which he says, no woman doesn't want to be swept off her feet. You know, whenever she says, oh, I'm more focused on my career, or I'm doing too busy with this and that, you know, no woman wouldn't love for like a George Clooney to come along and make her feel like the most special woman in the world. And I think George Clooney has actually played this very well by putting that out there, that, oh, you know, I'm never going to get married or whatever. What that does is it raises his stock. Everyone wants to be the person that goes, well, he said that he never settled down, but I was the one. I was the one that snatched him up. I was the one that made him want to commit. And that makes you feel even more special. So that's why, because it's not like people haven't been chasing George Clooney. It's like, oh, well, he doesn't want to commit. And therefore, no one, everyone wants to be with George Clooney.
Yeah. You're right.
He's played it perfectly. Like, he's done a Clooney.
And I know I've said that I didn't have romantic feelings for him or anything like that. And I stand by that. But... if I was to marry any guy, he'd be close to the top of the list. Like, if gun to my head, you have to marry a man, but it can be any man you choose, he'd be a good guy to be married to. I thought you were going with that you were going to go in that direction of going, every girl wants some guy to come and sweep them off their feet. And you were even going to say one of two things. One, and George Clooney is no different. He just wants a girl to come and sweep him off his feet. Or that, Matt, you're just not a very good sweeper.
And, you know, other than being, you know, the person that gets to say they finally snatched up Clooney and all the perks of dating by all accounts, top bloke, successful actor, great celebrity, is that you never have to worry about him, you know, lying to you or acting with you because he only ever plays George Clooney.
Get off it. I've got a second piece of housekeeping. As people know, I do some work for a website called goldderby.com. It's a good website. We cover the Emmys Entertainment Awards, second to none. And I got a chance to talk with this week Jack Huston, who people might know from Boardwalk Empire. Do you know who this guy is, Jonathan?
I do. I think I'll listen even more so than Boardwalk Empire. People might be likely to recognise him as a Screen Verdict Award winner for the Best TV Actor of 2012.
Now, when I was chatting with him, I filled him in, he won our podcast award. I let him know, the first person who's ever won a podcast award that's been let known, I don't think I named the podcast. I think I just said you won our podcast award.
I'm sure he knows the name. It's not like you have to say the Academy Award every time. You know, people know what it's called.
Exactly. So, do you want to hear the clip of him finding out he won the Screen Verdict Award?
Of course.
Oh, this does have a spoiler for... This has a spoiler for Boardwalk Empire Season 4, everyone. Jack, it's, as always, been a lot of fun to talk.
What a pleasure, man. I'm glad we got to do it again, bro.
I'm glad. I did think when Richard died, I was like, oh no, this is going to be my last chat with Jack.
Oh, that's sweet. I know, me too. Yeah. Hopefully we'll find other things to do it on, though. We can, everyone will be talking about other projects in the future.
Yeah, we'll have to. And Richard, was such a fan favorite character. Like, me and my friend do a podcast together, and you won our award for best male actor in a TV show one year and things. Because Richard, he just connected with people really well. And Boardwalk Empire is going to be great, I'm sure, the last 8 episodes, but a bit less great, I think, without Richard.
Oh man, that's so kind to say. Well, the pleasure was all mine playing that part, and hopefully he'll be remembered fondly.
So thanks for chatting with us today, Richard.
Thank you so much, Matt. That's so kind. You're the best.
Oh no! I just realised I called him Richard at the end there. he remembered my name. So there you go. I told him about it. He heard it. He seemed pleased.
What a lovely guy, Jack Huston. Couldn't be a more deserving Screen Verdict Award winner.
He is seriously, like, of all the people I've interviewed and spoken to, he's definitely top 3 nicest.
I just realised at the end, the clip actually cuts off. I think he goes to finish by saying, you know, thanks, Matt, you're the best. But it cuts off, maybe, but now I just realised that you called him the wrong name. When it cuts off at best, maybe he was calling you a bastard for misremembering his name.
Yeah, you bested.
No, he wouldn't do that. What a lovely guy. What a top guy.
We can talk a bit after that, and just, it was very complimentary both ways. You know, sometimes you're on the phone with a good friend and you sort of don't know who should hang up first. Like, that's pretty much.
It's good to know that even celebrities get a little bit nervous when talking to the Screen Verdict podcasters.
Yeah, yes, for sure.
So that's the podcast coming up. We've possibly got some film reviews including maybe The Muppets. We all know Matt's keen for that. We'll see if he can get me to watch it this week. And I'm still catching up on The Walking Dead, watching Game of Thrones, looking forward to reviewing that.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe even a sneaky 24 cast in the near future.
That's not really how it goes.
So, the countdown for that is on. Damn, I'm on edge. All right. Try and keep you cool until then, and we'll see you next week.
See ya.